Crimecast 15. And if you're interested and you like what you're hearing, check out Evil Now and pick up a book or CD or DVD that I've done with crime in mind.
The first person executed by lethal injection in California, KFI's Michael Clark joins us live from San Quentin.
When witnesses were brought into San Quentin's execution chamber viewing area, they saw only a curtain. But once that curtain was open, they saw William Bonin already strapped to a gurney with IVs running to both arms. 4 minutes later, Bonin was dead.
Every time we would ask Lieutenant McFarland any remorse, anything going on, it was all, nah, he's concerned about his friends. He's concerned that his friends would get good seats at the execution. That was real important for him. He was concerned about where his personal property was going to go. And when he was specifically asked, how about the families, he just refused to talk about it. He wouldn't talk about it. And then McFarland was asked, how about the rest of the prisoners? One of their own are going to die. The prisoners are in quiet acceptance of what was to happen. The prison was in lockdown. They know what happens. Then we started talking about the last meal. And we knew that he had ordered pizza. We knew that he had ordered ice cream. We knew that he had ordered Coke and coffee. But we sort of nailed her. What kind of pizza? From where? Was it going to come in from Domino's, the way Robert Alton Harris's pizza came into? We heard one of the guards behind, when someone asked, and where's the pizza coming from? One of the guards muttered, Tombstone Pizza. As dust starts to roll in, this is now last night, we're about 6 hours into this. Keep in mind, William Bonin is still with his friends. He is in a holding room, sort of a room, I believe, near death row, where friends and family are allowed. The question was asked to Lieutenant McFarland, does he have any family there? And she said, he has friends there. And we kept on asking her, what does that mean? What do friends mean? She goes, that's confidential information, we can't tell you. Is it people in the prison? Is it other death row inmates? That's confidential information, we can't tell you. All we got all day long is that Bonin is enjoying the company of friends. Nothing more. Protesters are starting to arrive at the East Gate. How do I know? Because I'm sitting there eating my dinner on a paper plate in front of the simulator out in the parking lot, and eight correctional officers in riot gear now start walking towards the gate. So we know something's coming up. They're moving. I look up, news helicopters begin to fly overhead. Then I realize, you know what? These aren't news helicopters. These are police helicopters that are putting lights on all the hills overlooking San Quentin. San Quentin's down at the water, and there are these rolling hills above where there are houses, where there are streets. And if you look carefully, you see people now starting to park and line up. A lot like on the 4th of July, the fireworks show, as people start lining the good places to see. I know that at 8 o'clock there's going to be another press conference and a lot of questions will be answered because the very aptly named Lieutenant Joy McFarland will be back once again telling us what is going on. As I look at the East Gates, we now see a lot of protesters at the gates. Signs are going up all over the place. We hear a little bit of screaming. They won't let us near the East Gate. They will not let us near that place. No way. But we know it's happening. We now start listening to radio interviews in the car. There's a group of people that have walked 25 miles from San Francisco to protest William Bonin's death. They left early in the morning, walked 25 miles under the leadership. I'm trying to get his name right. It sounds an awful lot like Cleric Father Idiot, if I remember correctly what his name was. Sounded just like that, and if it didn't, that should have been his name. About this time, he's been moved to the death cell. Because we were told that in a handout, and we were told that by Lieutenant McFarland, that he is actually moved into the death cell. Let me explain to you what the death cell is. The gas chamber room is a large room about 30 feet by 50 feet. behind it which the gas chamber itself, the old gas chamber, is a small anteroom where they used to mix the chemicals and where the machinery was. On the other side, towards the door that you walk in, this is all behind the walls, sits an office for the warden with telephones, two telephones, one to the Supreme Court, if necessary, one to the Attorney General and or the Governor of California. And then there are two cells called the Death Watch cells. The Death Watch cells have a bed, have a toilet. He is in the cells by himself. His friends are no longer with him. He has access to a telephone, and he has access to a television set. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you what this man did. When Lieutenant McFarland came out and gave us our 8 o'clock press conference and told us what Bonin was doing, what he was doing in his death cell watch with no one around him, he was watching Jeopardy. He was watching Jeopardy on television. And then it came out, the food. It was two large round table pepperoni and sausage pizzas, 3 pints of Safeway coffee ice cream, 3 6-packs of Coke. He was the prison chaplain in the cell because during Death Watch, all you're allowed to have is your spiritual advisor outside the cell. You have the telephone, you have the TV, you have your food. And you have all night to eat. By the way, they will keep on bringing you coffee and soft drinks and anything you might want right up until, literally, you are strapped in the gurney. Lieutenant McFarland also described the 3 injections clinically that were going to happen in about 4 hours. 5 grams of sodium pentothal. 50 cc's of pancurium promide, the pentothal to put him to sleep, to render him unconscious, the pancuronium bromide to paralyze his muscles, lungs, his breathing, and the 50 cc's of potassium chloride to kill him, shut down his heart. At 9 o'clock, we were all, the media witnesses, were escorted to a deputy warden's office to talk to a psychologist. They had a psychologist there to talk to the media witnesses, to vent our feelings. Dr. Maurice Lyons. He went around the room asking for experience in previous executions. He talked about the experiences we will have when we go in that death chamber. He talked about what our expectations. He talked about stress response, the adrenaline going through us. He said, be prepared for the memory of the execution to come back. It may happen when you're awake. When you're asleep, it may happen any time over the next few days. It is perfectly normal. Don't go to a shrink. Get human contact. What can we expect to happen? And he tells us in clinical detail. You will see a curtain. All will be ready by the time they pull the curtain. You will see Bonin strapped in the chair. The door to the gas chamber will be closed. And at that time, we found out something that surprised me. There is no machine that injects the chemicals. There are syringes on the other side of that gas chamber door that are hooked by plastic tubes to Bonin that people press on the syringes.
Lieutenant McFarland tells us, and she is very serious about this, to all the media witnesses, there will be no disruptions. There will be no talking. We will take away everything from you. Your watches, your wallet, your money, your pens, your pads. You're going to be given 2 pencils and some paper stapled together to write your note. And the last appeal was denied at 10:51 by United States Supreme Court. It's over. We know William Bonin is going to die. The final appeal denied by fax. Supreme Court comes in and sends a fax to the state of California. And so now, we get in the shuttle buses to be driven to the execution chamber. All the media follows us. The cameras are following us as we board these buses for a 200-yard drive.
The gate opens up, and we go into the compound, where on the left is a snack room for the guards with machines where we're going to be held for a while, and to the right, a door down a little alley that leads us into the execution chamber of San Quentin. We wait. 11:30, 11:40, 11:45, 11:50. What's happening? It's not happening. 12:01. At the time the executions take place, finally they say, come on. The door opens. We walk single file across this little road. Guards are lining on one side. We go down this tiny little alley, maybe 15, 20, 30 feet, and there's a door open at the end. So I figure, fine, we're going to walk into a room and then go down a corridor and then down the way and then find in the bowels of this building the room where the executions take place. And as I near the doorway, I take a gasp because there it is. There is that green chamber, that octagonal green chamber right in front of me. The room is right literally on the outside of the building. It's the first door in. It's like you open the door to your house, and instead of your living room, you're looking at a gas chamber. You're looking at an execution chamber. Curtains are drawn across the windows, just like they said. And all of a sudden, the adrenaline starts pumping, and you know it's about to happen. You just know. How do you prepare for that? The media witnesses go around the chamber to the far side. Imagine if you're going in the left side, the chamber's in front of you. To immediately to the right are tiers where the victims' families are, where you see the mothers of some of the children that have been killed. And then off to the right are the tiers where we stand. So in the room, about 50 people, comprised of four different groups, actually. The media witnesses, we go in last, we go out first. The victims' families, already in place, sort of dead center, looking directly on. To their left, a tier with five or six people, William Bonin's friends, the people that he has elected to be witnesses. And then directly in front of the gas chamber, staring at the window, almost their faces pressed against the glass, are the state witnesses that are holding on to this metal rail. And then, as soon as we're set, now we're looking around, it's very strange. You look up, you look around, you try to recognize some people. It's hard. It's cold outside, it's warm inside. You're looking at this chamber. It's a very strange, strange environment. And they waste no time. They hustle you down. It's like, move, move, schnell, schnell, down to the end. Everybody gets into place. I get a lower tier. I'm at the far, far corner. And I couldn't care less. I knew he was going to die. We all knew he was going to die. But I wanted to know who these people were. And so I spent a lot of my time during those 4 or 5 minutes as Bonin was dying and the room was silent, looking at the victim's family, the tier where they are. There was one young man that no one really knew who he was, who had curly hair, sort of a beard. He had a picture of, later on I found out, was one of the young victims, Sean King. He was in his 20s, it looked like. And as this was going, he was quietly sobbing to himself, clutching by himself, sort of in another world, would look up, would sob. Remember, we heard about David McVicker, the survivor of the rape by Bonin. He was there, and he was hugging one of the moms, Sandra Miller. But the one who struck me, for some reason, I don't even know why I just absolutely was riveted to this woman, and I spent more time with her, was Barbara Bean, who lost her young boy, Stephen Wood, 14 years ago. She was holding 2 8x10 framed photos of her son. She was clutching them to her breast. and they were facing Bonin. Smiling picture of this gorgeous blonde-haired child. And I think her son, Stephen, was one of the youngest ones that Bonin killed. And she was clutching these pictures to her breast, rocking back and forth the entire time Bonin was dying. A look of grim satisfaction on her face. Not much emotion, just the clutching of the picture. You can see how tight her knuckles were holding onto the picture as this kid was looking out with this smile. You know, those great pictures that parents have of their kids. And this incredible look of satisfaction on her face.